views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
This is Debbie Pokornik, host of Vibrant Powerful Moms, a podcast focused on helping you remember who you really are so you can realign with that vibrant energy and fully enjoy the life you've come here to live. Today, we're going to talk about healthy lifestyle habits. I spent a lot of years in the world of natural health trying to decipher why I lack energy. I've come a long way from reacting to almost every meal, catching every cold or flu that went around, experiencing daily headaches and regular migraines, suffering from really bad periods and so on, to where I am now, which is in a place with very few headaches, no migraines at all, a much happier gut, way less period pain, and a stronger immune system. Despite this, I still believe that there is more for me to learn and that my overall energy could be better. So I continue to take courses, read books, participate in regular detoxes, dabble in essential oils, homeopathy herbs, and so on, as well as see a Mayan abdominal massage therapist, an osteopath, a physiotherapist, and once in a while sprinkle in a visit to the chiropractor. Currently, I'm participating in Ari Witten's Energy Blueprint program. I'm reading Amy Meyer's book, The Thyroid Connection. I'm releasing blocks via meditations with Carrie Samuels, and I'm enjoying energy healing with Emmanuel Dagger. I'm also a regular follower of the Urban Monk, Dr. Sarah Gottfried, who wrote The Hormone Cure, Mark Hyman, who wrote Eat Fat, Get Thin, Alan Christensen, the author of The Adrenal Reset, and Josh Axe, who has done a lot of great things, but I have to say, it's his posters that dominate my Rockin' the Health Boat Pinterest board, as well as the Bulletproof guy, Dave Asprey. Why am I telling you this? Because I feel strongly guided to share some of the wonderful things I've been learning. As a mother, I think I would have enjoyed being tuned into more of this information when my kids were young, although I totally believe that their journey is unfolding exactly as it was meant to, and they were definitely raised in a far more health-conscious home than many. So I don't mean to suggest that I'm filled with regret. However, that doesn't mean I can't share some of my thoughts and insights with others, because that is, after all, what this podcast is all about. So today, I'd like to focus on health tips. Specifically, healthy habits, things you might not know about but are ready to hear, things that you might not be ready to embrace but are at least willing to be introduced to, and even things that you might already know about but, like me, are not totally clear on why they are important enough to put into your life. My goal is to help you become aware of any self-depleting patterns that you might be creating in your own life and your child's, and give you ideas of what you can do instead if you decide that you want to make any changes. I'm also sharing names wherever I can in case you want to do an internet search and find out more on any of these topics. So if you're listening to the podcast only and you missed the names I gave earlier, you might want to visit my blog and get a copy of this week's written notes so that you have resources available. Alrighty. Let's move on into healthy lifestyle habits. I have five that I would like to share. The first one is to avoid eating before bed. Lots of people talk about sleep and body processes that occur during this time. Ari Witten helped me to really understand the process. Your body has a lot of important work to do during the night, and eating food gets in the way of that happening. In fact, overnight is when the cleaning process happens, something called autophagy. And it's where any broken or misshapen material gets scooped up so that it will be replaced with better stuff. When you eat, your body can't go into autophagy because those resources are focused on digesting. Now, that's okay during the day when you need energy to operate. It's not okay when you're sleeping. In fact, it means that the next day your body has to use those broken or misshapen pieces that should have gone in the garbage. Now, I'm all for reusing, but not when it becomes a health concern. So the answer is to become aware of your fasting window, the time that you go without food, which is typically overnight, and ensure that it is at least 12 hours long. 13 to 14 is even better, but you know, you've got to start somewhere. So you want to stop eating 3 to 4 hours before bed. During that time, you can still enjoy tea, coffee, water. You just really want to watch out for anything sugary or that has milk or anything in it. If you're breastfeeding a newborn, this might not be doable yet. Your baby might insist on eating in the night, and you might find that you need nourishment then too. That's okay. Baby time is always an exception. Do what works best for you and babe, and then as soon as you're able to stop feeding the baby at night, see if you can stop your munching too. One final thought worth exploring here is, are you training your older kids to think a bedtime snack is the norm? Was this something you were raised with, or have you picked it up watching other adults? I know my kids, they would have a bedtime snack very sporadically, because thankfully it had not been a part of my bedtime ritual as a child, so it wasn't an ingrained belief that I had to challenge. But I did find that when I'd invite other adults and their kids would be sleeping over, I would notice them saying, "So, do you want to have a bedtime snack? Or what do you want for your snack before bed?" And then I think to my kids, "Oh, what would you like to have?" And so I would add it in there too. The important part here is to notice, to become aware of what you're teaching your kids and what you're doing to yourself. Because oftentimes we think we need to eat something before bed in order for us to sleep better. It's not true, and our body actually needs us to tune back in to what is best. Now, I forgot to mention this earlier, and so I'm going to bring it in here. I'm not a doctor. I'm a mother sharing what she has learned. You are the expert in your own home. And so I really challenge you to stand in your power, to not accept anything that feels wrong to you, but instead keep an open mind and search until you find out what works for you and your kids. So please don't think that you need to feel guilty now if you're having a snack because I told you you shouldn't be. The second tip is to support your circadian rhythm. Your circadian rhythm is what wakes you up in the morning, helps you fall asleep at night, and schedules most of your body's maintenance. Cleaning, rebuilding, hormone distribution, and many other things are all determined by this rhythm. When your circadian rhythm is disrupted, everything gets messed up. And according to Ari Witten and many of the other doctors I mentioned earlier, there is plenty of evidence that this is a really big problem. Here are some of the things you can do to ensure that you're working with your rhythm as much as possible. Now, I have many ideas now, thanks to all of these doctors, but let me put out just a few of them. The first one is to pay attention to lights after dark. Ari talks about how your circadian rhythm is thrown off kilter by artificial light. Even worse, blue light, that which is given off by computers, iPads, phones, TVs, etc., is the most disruptive of all. Firelight, red lights, low, like orangey lights, are much better for your rhythm and tell your body to start producing melatonin at the right time. Melatonin is the hormone that helps us fall asleep. If you feel tired a lot, or find it hard to fall asleep when you finally drop into bed exhausted, try to avoid or minimize the blue light in your evening life. In the summertime, when it's light till after bedtime, it's not a problem. This is in the wintertime, when it gets dark much earlier and we turn on our artificial lights. I've actually ordered some blue blocker glasses from Amazon so that I can watch the hockey games, because now that that season has started back up, I don't want to not be able to watch, but I also don't want to be disrupting my circadian rhythm. iPhones, it turns out, have an evening light setting. I didn't even know that, but mine is now on. And apparently there are free downloads for computers that you can put on them so that if you have to be on the computer right up until bedtime, you're at least not taking in the blue light. So do what you can to eliminate or avoid blue light for at least an hour before bedtime. Making your room as dark as possible is also important. So blackout screens can help with that if you have like blackout blinds. If you live in the city, that's really important. And even if you live in the country but you have a yard light shining in your window, then you're going to want to make it darker if you feel like your circadian rhythm is out of whack. If you need a nightlight for walking to the baby's room during the night, or maybe one on all the time in your child's room, see if you can get away with a red bulb. I bought those from Amazon as well. If this isn't bright enough, you could try a low wattage amber light, but know that it still could be disrupting your child's circadian rhythm. Next, you want to get outside during the day. Nothing is as good for you as natural sunlight, so do your best to get outside as soon as the sun starts to rise. Both Ari and Dr. Christensen, who did the Adrenal Reset book, suggest that you do this within the first hour of getting up. But of course, it has to be daylight for this to work. Full spectrum lights can be used in the first hour after waking for those of us who live in places that there's no daylight at that time. Another idea is to try a natural light alarm clock if possible. If you have to wake up to an alarm anyway, I know so many parents who tell me that getting their child up for daycare or school is such a challenge, especially in the dark winter months. As a result, they're tired and grouchy, which doesn't help if mom is tired and grouchy as well. So you might want to try a natural light clock for you, for your kids, or maybe for both of you. These clocks start to brighten your room just like daylight would, which alerts your body to send out a shot of cortisol, which is the hormone that gets you out of bed, awake, and ready to start the day. Of course, if you've been up several times with your child in the night, nothing will fix the loss of sleep, and my heart goes out to you. But know that this phase is only temporary, and eventually you will return to having more control over your sleep. So hopefully you're still on that leave, and if you're back at work, you're able to sleep through the night most nights. A few other quick ideas for the circadian rhythm is to do your best to create a time for bed and a time to get up routine and then stick with it. This one's really tough for me because when I wake up in the morning, somewhere around 7, I would like to turn over and doze. You maybe not get up for another hour or so, especially on the weekends. But apparently your circadian rhythm needs you to have a routine. So it's in your best interest to get up when you wake up rather than dozing. Or in the case of an alarm clock, especially if you're using the daylight alarm, you'd still get up when you wake up. Don't turn off that light and try to go back to sleep because you feel you could really sleep for another half hour. The other thing when you get up, that it should be energized at that time. So if you get up and you slog your way to the bathroom and then slog your way to the coffee pot and you're slowly moving around, I used to do this all the time where I would come down to my office and then I'd sit down on the couch to meditate and sometimes I would just fall right back asleep. And instead, if you remind yourself that you're supposed to be energized, so maybe make a few trips up and down the stairs, or I like to go outside at this time of year and stand out on my deck. It's very cool out, but it's enough to kind of wake me up and get me going. The point is, I was teaching my body to feel sleepy in the morning. I was dulling my circadian rhythm. And so by simply making this little change and reminding myself that I should be energized at that time makes a difference for my body. Along with setting up a routine for what time you go to bed and wake up, it's actually in your best interest to try to eat your meals around the same time too. Now, this actually works out quite well when you work because you probably have the same lunchtime and you get home around the same time and that's when you eat. I know for myself, this has been a real issue. I eat a big breakfast somewhere around 8:30, and then I'm not hungry at noon. And the next thing I know, it's 2 o'clock before I'm eating lunch, and then I'm not really hungry for supper, and on it goes. And so you want to set up a routine for that too, because your circadian rhythm relies on that routine. Finally, you can run a pink or white noise machine to decrease noise distractions if that's a problem for you. And it's also a good idea to keep your room a little bit cooler than you normally like it in the daytime. That will help with your sleep. All of these things together help to keep your circadian rhythm in check and help improve sleep quality, both of which can go a long way to keeping you on the happy side of life. Tip number 3, plug the drain by unplugging. Electromagnetic frequencies, also known as EMFs, drain you. By now, most of us have heard of them, and we know that they can affect our energy levels or our ability to think and so on. People joke about not living too close to power lines because of how it might affect our future generations, but as with most humor, there is an element of truth in it. I remember listening to an EMF specialist on a health show a couple years ago. Sorry, I cannot remember her name or even which summit she was on. But she was saying how one mother called her when her baby daughter wasn't hitting developmental milestones the way she should be. For example, she wasn't rolling over, she wasn't holding up her head, she wasn't sitting up, despite the fact that she was now 6 months old. The doctors were at a loss for how to help her and were starting to run all kinds of tests on baby to see what was wrong. It took this woman less than 5 minutes in the baby's room with her EMF machine to discover the problem. It turns out the mother had put a heater beside the crib because the baby's room was cool. The EMFs from that heater were actually robbing the baby of negative electrons while she slept. They got rid of all electrical items around the crib, and they actually went further. They took everything out of the room that didn't have to be in there that was plugged in, and they went to the room below because anything below can also come up through the floorboards. And they got rid of all of it, and within a couple days, the baby was rolling over. A couple more, she was lifting up her head, and within a week, she was sitting. Wow. So get rid of everything you can that plugs in close to your bed and to your child's bed. This is especially important for plug-ins by your head, including alarm clocks. There are things you can buy that actually give off negative electrons so that your body will not get out of balance, but it's always a good idea to start with the easiest solution. My favorite company is Vibes Up, which is an American company, but you can also find a lot of interesting things like Himalayan rock salt lamps, amethyst stones, Q-links, and others at local health stores. So shop around and you probably can find some things. As I mentioned, the more thorough and cost-effective answer is to unplug things. So that's where I would start. The fourth tip is to leave your phone in another room at night. In the last few years, smartphones have become a lifeline for so many people. They have them with them all the time, fully charged and ready to go. This is a problem in several ways. One is because of the EMFs I just mentioned. And with cell phones, the situation is a little bit different because even though the phone isn't always plugged in, it's still checking the tower for data regularly. This interrupts your own rhythm. You actually hear this even though you don't think you do, and it affects your sleep pattern, so it will take a toll on your body over time. Another problem is that having a cell phone that's always on means you are always on. People can call or text at any time of the day or night, disrupting the time when you're supposed to be restoring. In the rare situation where you need to be contacted in the middle of the night, people will find a way to get hold of you. I know this is a tough one to even consider, but the longer we have these phones, the more we are learning about the unhealthy effects. If you can, put your phone in a different room at night or put it in airplane mode. Even do not disturb with permission for certain contacts to be able to reach you is better than just having it on or especially having it plugged in right beside you. In line with this idea of always being on, it's a really good idea to start finding times of the day when you can be unplugged. Ideally, it would be great to get up in the morning and rather than checking in with your phone right away, taking some time to check in with yourself. During this time, you might set your intentions for the day or simply think thoughts like, I wonder what wonderful things are going to happen in my life today. You can also tune into your body by stretching, deep breathing, meditating, standing in sunlight, reciting a short gratitude list, whatever feels wonderful and is available to you is still going to be much better for you than immediately checking in with social media or your texting buddies. The final tip that I want to share with you is to avoid making food ruts. It's so easy to find a food you enjoy and then fall into a pattern of eating it on a regular basis. It might even get to a point where you panic if you're running out of something that you like to have every day. This is especially true in how we feed our kids. If you discover that your child eats cucumber willingly and it's a vegetable and it's good for you, it's very tempting to put that on his plate every day. This is even more true if your child is a picky eater. But honestly, this is not the best way to go. I totally understand this way of thinking, and I've fallen victim to it myself. Unfortunately, this is not a good habit to create. One of the reasons is because your body uses certain enzymes to digest certain foods. If you make a habit of eating peanut butter and toast every single day for breakfast, you have a good chance of using up those enzymes and creating digestive issues you won't want to deal with later. Another problem with this way of eating is that your body needs a variety of nutrients to function. If you only eat blueberries every day, even though blueberries are good for you, you will still suffer from missing the items that it doesn't have. Mixing it up with other berries, fruits, and veggies would make a very positive difference in your life. The third problem is when your diet isn't very pure and there's something in your bread or on your blueberries that is bad for you. Even though your body has the ability to clean out this undesirable when it appears, it cannot do this every day. And over time, these things will accumulate and create a toxic load that results in a diagnosis nobody wants to hear. I remember Dr. Huldah Clark saying, even though we can all handle a little bit of arsenic without any ill effect, a little bit every day starts to build up and will eventually lead to that person being poisoned. So try not to create ruts that go longer than an item would be in season. For example, all kinds of squash are available in the fall, and you should feel free to enjoy them. But once its season is over, you want to switch back to having it every once in a while. A good way to look at this is it's okay to run out of things every few weeks and to have to go a day or two without. Try to find a variety of different foods. With kids, it can help to get them involved by asking them to find different colors. This week we're going to eat purple things and see if you can get them excited about eating purple things. Or with my kids, we did fruit testing where we found different fruit that we hadn't had or we hadn't had in quite a while, and then we ate that and we tried to time it with when those fruits were in season. Watch out for other repeats and do your best to break them up where you can. Now, I don't want you to use this to create a bunch of stress in your life. You might go a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks eating the same thing, and that's okay. But if you start to pay attention, start to notice, what am I eating all the time? Start to celebrate when you run out of something and go, okay, I guess we're going to have a couple days without butter. This is going to be a little bit difficult, but maybe we'll try coconut oil. Or maybe we'll try going without. When you do this, you actually benefit yourself and your kids. Your life is demanding, and you've been taught that to be more efficient and therefore productive, you need to juggle many things in your day. As a result, you go on autopilot and create habits wherever you can. What I'm suggesting is that you do this from a conscious place and create healthy habits that you understand and feel are helping you to be the vibrant, powerful person that you're choosing to be. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it with others, rave about it on social media, and give it a positive review. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik, wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant, Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and leave us a positive review. To find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant, Powerful Moms, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. Have you ever worked in a corporation where the staff is pitted against each other in an effort to make them work harder? People are compared on a continual basis and competition is fierce. It's that dog-eat-dog environment where everyone must watch their own back. This is a common scenario in our society and one that's not often challenged. Frequently, men in an environment such as this will say that they'd prefer a group of egotistical males over working with a group of competitive women any day. Why? Because women are very creative, adaptive, and tuned into others. We're quick to figure out how to manipulate, undermine, and hurt our opponent. Jealousy, backstabbing, and vindictive mind games can arise in this kind of environment, creating a place where nobody trusts, feels safe, or is willing to take a risk. In such an environment, the tough will survive and they'll rise to the top, but only by clawing their way up there. What happens, though, if we take a similar corporation and have this business value and promote a collaboration model instead? Assuming that their employees understand how collaboration, creativity, and connectivity interrelate in this model and have the skills for working within it, what sort of outcome would arise? Well, a balanced male would have no trouble doing his best work in this environment and would enjoy the harmony in the office. He would take pleasure in the healthy and fun competition that naturally surfaces among colleagues with no fear of underhandedness or lashing out. The females would excel as well. They would develop a strong support system with both the men and the women in the company. They would work together, backing each other up and putting their heads together for ultimate creativity sessions. The leaders in the crowd would immediately be recognized and encouraged to fully embrace that role. The rest of the group would feel nurtured and supported in exploring their strengths and improving their skills. In other words, everyone would naturally fall into the role that fits them best at the moment, while still feeling like an important and contributing member. No energy would be wasted on jealousy, backstabbing, revenge, or undermining. All of the staff would feel invested, supported, safe, and accepted. Doesn't this sound like a beautiful place to work? Hypothetically speaking, it is. And this corporation would be unstoppable. Since I wrote this in Standing in Your Power back in 2014, I actually think there are companies that are doing this, not because they read my book, but just because that's the shift that's happening right now. So I think we're actually starting to see corporations who are thinking this way and are striving for this kind of balance. Our reality, though, prior to that, and for so many corporations, is that we have so many unbalanced people that are struggling to understand why they just can't seem to find happiness, that a corporation would be hard-pressed to find the employees who are really ready for this model. Interestingly, though, if a business supports a system of collaboration and connection, and if leaders are ready and capable of promoting this model, they will be surprised at how quickly their staff adapt or voluntarily leave the environment. Most people will feel the pull towards balance as soon as they enter such a place, and they'll quickly realize that it's a great place for them to be. This same concept can be applied to families, committees, communities, and countries. If and when we're finally ready to start making these kinds of changes.